Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. This week, we try and answer questions from a very loyal listener and subscriber, Harrison in Erie, Pennsylvania. He asked, was the November 2nd, 1963 Chicago JFK assassination plot connected to the Dallas assassination plot? Chicago plot, you say? That's right, this week we will try and answer questions about a possible event that most Americans had no idea about, and it came close to happening. While we know that President Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas on November 22, 1963, is it possible that that was Plan B? Most people don't realize that there was an assassination attempt uncovered just 3 weeks early on President Kennedy's planned trip to Chicago, and you will be amazed to hear how that plan was an exact replica of what the Warren Commission says happened in Dallas. Coincidence? I don't think so.
Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
By now, everyone knows the story of the JFK assassination. On November 2, 1963, a lone assassin named Thomas Arthur Valley assassinated President Kennedy in Chicago, Illinois. The president was in Chicago to attend the Army Air Force football game at Soldier Field, and he was assassinated as he... Hold up. What? That's not what happened. But it almost did. Everyone knows the story of Dallas, but few people know that 3 weeks before that, there was nearly an assassination attempt on JFK's life in Chicago. This is a crazy, crazy story that almost ended up being one of the most significant events in our country's history. And by the way, this isn't some conspiracy, a rumor, or theory, or anything like that. There's official FBI reports and arrest records to back up this story, and over the years, the mainstream press has even occasionally mentioned it. It all began on Wednesday, October 30th, 1963, when the FBI received a call from an informant. The informant said that there were four assassins in Chicago who were going to kill JFK while he was in town for the Army Air Force football game that weekend. These men were right-wing paramilitary fanatics that would be using high-powered scoped rifles. JFK's trip was 3 days away when this call came in, and it set off a frantic citywide manhunt for these four assassins, and the Chicago Secret Service led the investigation. Now, one of the many interesting notes to this story is that the FBI informant who called in this tip only identified himself as Lee on the phone. Wow, imagine that. Obviously, 3 weeks later, the name Lee would live in infamy when Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested for the murder of JFK in Dallas. Over the years, it has been rumored that Lee Harvey Oswald was in fact an FBI informant, and this has led some to believe that the Lee who called the FBI about the Chicago plot was none other than Lee Harvey Oswald himself. Now, this has never been proven, and the caller was never identified, but it's definitely a bit strange that he gave the name Lee. A landlady a day later called into the police her concerns about noticing four rifles with scopes in rooms she had rented to four men, and she was concerned about the upcoming trip to Chicago by President Kennedy. After these phone calls from Lee and the landlady, the Chicago Secret Service tore the city apart, and they eventually found two people in a boarding house on Clark and Division. These two people were found with high-powered rifles, scopes, and a Chicago map with the presidential route highlighted. No, that's not suspicious at all. These two men were brought in for questioning but refused to cooperate with the Secret Service. Oh, and another thing. Still to this day, their identities are unknown. So that was two assassins off the street. But if Lee was right, there were four assassins in total, which meant two were still out there, and the president would be arriving in Chicago in 2 days. That next morning, things took another twist when a second phone call came in. The caller claimed that a Chicago resident named Thomas Arthur Valley had been overheard threatening to kill JFK on his visit to Chicago. The Chicago Secret Service was frantically trying to find the two assassins on the loose, so they asked the Chicago police to find Thomas Arthur Valley. The Chicago police assigned two officers, Daniel Groth and Charles Sherlock, to quote, get Valley off the streets, end quote, before the president's visit. It only took them a few hours to find Valley at his boarding house on Pauline and Wilson. But instead of arresting him, the Chicago cops followed Valley for almost 24 hours. And they didn't arrest him until 10:10 a.m. in the morning on the day of JFK's visit. When Thomas Arthur Valley was arrested, police found 300 rounds of ammunition and two M1 rifles in his possession. In Washington, JFK's team was getting updates on the Chicago situation. On the morning of his visit, minutes before he was scheduled to fly to Chicago on Air Force One, they feared for his life and decided to cancel the trip, claiming JFK was busy with the situation in Vietnam. The decision to cancel would have come around 10 in the morning, and the interesting thing here is that it was only after JFK decided to cancel his trip that Groth and Sherlock arrested Thomas Arthur Valley. In other words, they followed Valley around for almost 24 hours, could have arrested him at any point during his time, but instead only arrested him after JFK canceled his trip. This had led some to believe that Groth and Sherlock's true mission wasn't to, quote, get Valley off the street. If it was, they would have arrested him immediately, right after they found him. Instead, some believe the two cops were there to watch Valley until he carried out his task of assassinating JFK. The two cops were basically chaperones assigned to keep an eye on Valley until the assassination went down. But when JFK abruptly canceled his trip at the last minute, it threw the assassination plans in total disarray, and the cops' mission suddenly changed from chaperoning Valley to arresting him and aborting the plan. Back in the day, this was a big controversy around the Chicago area for a while. The cops involved were heavily scrutinized. This incredible story would never have been known if it not for one person, Abraham Bolden. He was the first black Secret Service agent assigned to presidential protection, personally appointed by JFK. After that, he transferred to the Chicago Secret Service office, and he was a key player in investigating the Chicago assassination plot. Now, when JFK was assassinated in Dallas 3 weeks later, the Warren Commission was formed to investigate the assassination. Their main task was advertised to be that they would determine if there was some sort of mysterious group of people involved in a plot to kill JFK in Dallas, or if the assassination was simply the work of one man, Lee Harvey Oswald. When Abraham Bolden read up on the Warren Commission, he was shocked to learn the commission wasn't even looking into the link between the Dallas assassination and the Chicago assassination plot. It seemed as if they weren't even aware of the fact that 3 weeks before Dallas, there was another near attempt on JFK's life in Chicago. So Bolden contacted J. Lee Rankin of the Warren Commission to inform him about the Chicago plot, and this ended up being a big mistake. At the time, the Warren Commission was portraying the Dallas assassination as a one-time event pulled off by a lone nut. It was Lee Harvey Oswald. There was no one else involved, and it was no grand conspiracy. But when Bolden told Rankin that only 3 weeks earlier a similar assassination plot was nearly carried out by a team of assassins in Chicago, it completely contradicted the notion that Dallas was some random, one-time isolated event. Someone clearly didn't want Bolden talking, because after he contacted the Warren Commission, Bolden was arrested, charged with accepting a bribe, and sentenced to 6 years in prison. Bolden claimed he was framed, and he most likely was right. He had been convicted on the word of two counterfeiters. One of the counterfeiters, Joseph Spagnola, later admitted in court that he had lied when testifying about Bolden. Unfortunately, Abraham Bolden spent almost 4 years in federal prison, and the Warren Commission mentioned nothing about the Chicago plot in the report on the Dallas assassination. In 2008, Bolden published an autobiography titled, quote, The Echo from Dealey Plaza, in which he told his side of the story. The final interesting note about this Chicago plot are the remarkable number of similarities between Lee Harvey Oswald and Thomas Arthur Valley. Both were former Marines who joined around the same time. Both had served at Marine bases in Japan. The CIA was known to have a strong presence at both bases, making them prime recruiting stations. Both Valley and Oswald were involved in anti-Castro Cubans, Oswald in New Orleans, and Valley at a training camp on Long Island, New York. Get this one. Both had recently started working at businesses that overlooked the routes of Kennedy's presidential parades. Oswald at the Texas School Book Depository on Elm Street in Dallas, and Valley at the IPP Litho Plate at 625 West Jefferson Boulevard in Chicago. The lives of both of these men were also filled with mysterious connections to government agencies. There's proof out there that Lee Harvey Oswald was an FBI informant. And when Thomas Arthur Valley was arrested by Chicago police, he was driving a Ford Falcon with New York plates 31-10RF. An NBC Chicago reporter named Luke Christopher Hester ran the plates, and the results came back with something amazing. The license plates were frozen, and any information about the registration for Valley's car was restricted to U.S. intelligence agencies. So why was this supposed assassin driving around in a car with government-protected plates on it? Very good question. JFK's planned route in Chicago was similar to his route in Dallas as well. In Chicago, he was to take the Northwest Expressway, later renamed the Kennedy Expressway, to downtown. He would then take the Jackson Street exit, which was in the warehouse district right at the IPP litho plate building where Valley worked. And what a coincidence that in both Dallas and Chicago, the motorcade would have to make a very sharp 90-degree turn right in front of the buildings where the supposed assassins worked. How convenient. The view from the IPP litho plate building was virtually identical to the view from the Texas School Book Depository, with both offering unobstructed views of Kennedy's car. Now do you see why I say that this was possibly Plan A? It has long since come to light that there was a Plan A and a Plan B for the assassination, as is standard operating procedure for any well-planned covert operation. What was unusual is that the two plans were nearly identical, though 925 miles and 20 days apart. This Field Chicago plot is more than just some interesting little side note in the JFK assassination story. The reason the Chicago plot is so significant is that it basically contradicts this notion that Lee Harvey Oswald was some sort of lone nut assassin who acted all on his own and there was no one else involved. After all, if there were two separate plots to kill JFK within a 3-week span, that's either a heck of a coincidence or there truly was some sort of coordinated group of people who wanted him dead. Abraham Bowden has even said that's why he was framed and arrested, because he was one of the few people at the time who actually knew about this Chicago plot. And his information that there was a plot to kill Kennedy in Chicago right before Dallas contradicted the notion that Lee Harvey Oswald was some lone nut lunatic assassin.
Tonight, an I-Team exclusive, a plot to kill President John F. Kennedy in Chicago 3 weeks before he was assassinated in Dallas. ABC 7 investigative reporter Chuck Gowdy has the details.
President Kennedy was murdered on November 22, 1963. Tomorrow is the 44th anniversary of JFK's assassination. But Lee Harvey Oswald would never have had the chance to kill Kennedy in Dallas had an assassination plot in Chicago succeeded 3 weeks earlier. A plot that has been mentioned over the years, but tonight, the first details. Mr. Kennedy was due to arrive in Chicago the morning of Saturday, November 2nd, to attend an Army Air Force football game at Soldier Field and ride in a parade. Newspapers had even printed JFK's detailed travel plan from O'Hare to the Loop. Although police were preparing to line the motorcade route, Secret Service officials in Chicago were deeply troubled about the visit because of two secret threats. This man, right-wing radical and Kennedy denouncer Thomas Valley, had arranged to be off work for JFK's visit. Valley, an expert marksman, was arrested with an M1 rifle, a handgun, and 3,000 rounds of ammo. But then there was the phone call to federal agents from a motel manager, concerned about what she saw in a room rented by two Cuban nationals.
Had seen lying on the bed several automatic rifles with telescopic sights with an outline of the route that President Kennedy was supposed to take. In Chicago, that would bring him past that building.
Chicagoan Abraham Bolden, now 72, was a young Secret Service agent in 1963. After a few years as an Illinois state trooper, Bolden had joined the Secret Service and was invited by President Kennedy himself onto the prestigious White House detail, the first black agent ever assigned to protect a president. Bolden recalls how agents bungled surveillance of those two suspected Cuban hitmen. They disappeared and were never identified.
No one was sent to the room to fingerprint it or to try to get some identification or anything like that. The case was just closed.
So that was the end of it.
That was the end of it.
On November 2nd, the president was about to leave the White House for Chicago, and Bolden says a Cuban murder squad here was unaccounted for.
The morning of the game, a call was made to Washington, D.C., to the chief of the Secret Service by Special Agent in Charge Martineau, with the recommendation that the president cancel his trip to Chicago.
News reports stated Kennedy didn't show because he was ill or because of a diplomatic crisis. Official investigations of JFK never determined why the president canceled Chicago November 2nd. But in his first interview in 44 years, former agent Bolden tells me JFK stayed away because of an imminent threat.
The president of the United States did not come to Chicago on November 2nd because he was basically waved off by the Secret Service.
Yes, that's right.
Absolutely. It wasn't because he had a cold.
No.
Information about Valley, his similarity in appearance and background to Lee Harvey Oswald, and details of the Cuban hit squad in Chicago were never given to federal agents in Dallas, Texas.
Yes, that was not passed on to Dallas, correct?
No, it was not. There's no evidence that they did.
In this book that Bolden wrote with his late wife, due out next spring, he will cite another contributing factor in the JFK murder, on-duty drunkenness by Secret Service agents.
Something has happened in the motorcade group.
I told the chief of the Secret Service this, that if anything happens, an emergency situation happens with President Kennedy, that their reflexes are going to be in such a condition that they won't be able to respond. And Dallas, Texas proved that I was right.
And the first unconfirmed reports say the president was hit in the head.
The president's life was in grave danger due to the inefficiency of the security that was surrounding him.
President Kennedy has been assassinated. It's official now. The president is dead.
When that bullet struck the head of the president, it struck me too, because I saw it coming.
When the Warren Commission began investigating JFK's assassination, Bolden says he attempted to inform members about the Chicago plot and misconduct by his fellow agents. During that time, Bolden himself was arrested and prosecuted for soliciting a bribe from a counterfeiter, and he served a 6-year sentence. He claims it was a setup to silence him. The main witness has since recanted, and Bolden hopes now to clear his name. A spokesman for the Secret Service in Washington tonight tells the I-team that officials, quote, would not have any comment whatsoever about Mr. Bolden's statements.
Had it not been for a few twists of fate, Chicago might have gone down in history as the site of JFK's assassination. The IPP Litho Plate Building would be forever remembered instead of the Texas School Book Depository, and Thomas Arthur Valley, not Lee Harvey Oswald, would be known as the most famous assassin in American history.
Surprised? We're in Chicago, not Dallas.
What many people do not know, even those who are familiar with most of the facts of the JFK case, is that there were two plots to kill President Kennedy in November of 1963. The first one was 3 weeks earlier in Chicago. Kennedy was supposed to arrive at O'Hare Airport on Saturday, November the 2nd at 11:40 a.m. He was to attend the Army Air Force football game at Soldier Field. But on Wednesday, October 30th, the FBI told the Secret Service in Chicago that a plot was afoot to kill Kennedy there.
There were actually two tips that reached the Secret Service in the week before JFK's trip here to Chicago, and we'll soon see that the two were interrelated. FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover reported the first tip. Hoover's information was that at least one hit team with high-powered rifles would attempt to shoot the president from a warehouse or office building overlooking the president's motorcade route that coming Saturday. An FBI informant named Lee provided the information. And yes, the Lee providing the tip and probably saving JFK's life that weekend may well have been Lee Harvey Oswald. A break in the case came on Thursday, October 31st, 2 days before the president's arrival at O'Hare. A landlady at a rooming house here in the vicinity of Clark and Division Streets reported that she oversaw four rifles with scopes and a map of the president's motorcade route in one of the rooms she had rented to four dark-complected men. Chicago's Secret Service initiated 24-hour surveillance, but an agent named J. Lloyd Stocks blew his cover in an alley behind the rooming house the following evening on Friday and had to take two of the men into immediate custody. Stocks questioned one of the suspects all night, while fellow Secret Service agent Robert Motto separately questioned the other man. By morning, neither agent had gotten his man to reveal anything, and Kennedy's plane was due at O'Hare in just a couple of hours. The second tip involved a man reported spouting anti-Kennedy rhetoric and known to have owned multiple firearms. there were some amazing similarities between this man and the man who would be arrested for JFK's murder 3 weeks later.
The planned patsy in Chicago was to be played by a man with a similar profile as Lee Harvey Oswald. His name was Thomas Vallee. The Secret Service was tailing him also, since the word was out that he had made violent threats against Kennedy. Consider the parallels between Oswald and Vallee. Like Oswald, Vallee was a former Marine who was stationed at a U-2 base in Japan. Like Oswald, the cover unit for Vallee's probable CIA recruitment was something called Joint Technical Advisory Group. Vallee had spoken bitterly of JFK in Cuba. He said, "We lost a lot of good men at the Bay of Pigs." Vallee had both rifles and ammunition in his apartment, since he had trained anti-Castro Cubans in Long Island, so the police trailed him. They pulled him over just a couple of hours before Kennedy was to arrive at O'Hare. It turned out that, like Oswald in Dallas, Vallee had a job in a warehouse along the president's motorcade route.
Today Condominiums, 625 West Jackson Street, was a warehouse in 1963. Thomas Vallee had been given a job at the IPP Lithoplate Company, a printer, on the third floor. Kennedy's limousine was scheduled to make a slow turn from the Northwest Expressway onto the Jackson Street exit and go right by Vallee's third floor window. So in August 1963, just as Lee Oswald was preparing to move from New Orleans back to Dallas, Thomas Vallee moved from New York City back to Chicago. Just as Oswald got a job right over Kennedy's future motorcade route in Dallas, so too did Vallee get a job in a warehouse right over Kennedy's future motorcade route in Chicago.
So the setup was a disaffected Marine patsy in a warehouse on an elevated floor above a presidential motorcade traveling at a slow pace below, with snipers hidden about the scene with telescopic rifles, and the patsy having gun and ammo in his possession. This is all almost eerily similar to what's going to happen in Dallas.
But it gets even more interesting. Just about the exact time JFK is scheduled to visit Chicago, half a world away in Vietnam, South Vietnamese President Diem and his brother are murdered in a CIA-sponsored plot. False CIA cables sent from Washington seemingly give Kennedy's okay for the assassination, even though he has ordered the CIA multiple times not to proceed in their request to kill Diem. Here is famed CIA agent E. Howard Hunt later testifying before a congressional committee about the false cables.
Just that I might be able to improve upon the record.
And what did you understand him to mean to, when he said to improve upon the record?
To fabricate cables that could substitute for the missing chronological cables.
Did you in fact fabricate cables for the purpose of indicating the relationship of the Kennedy administration and the assassination of Diem?
I did.
And did you show these fabricated cables, Mr. Colson?
I did.
We'll discuss Vietnam more a bit later, but it's important to know that President Kennedy had recently signed National Security Action Memo 263, calling for the almost immediate withdrawal of 1,000 advisors from Vietnam by the end of 1963, and the withdrawal of all American military personnel by the end of 1965. He was so angry after hearing about the murder of the Diem brothers that he recalled Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge that Saturday morning with the intent of firing him upon his return from his Texas trip. He had also ordered his defense secretary, Robert McNamara, to speed up preparations for the withdrawal of American military advisors from Vietnam. Similar to Laos the year before, Kennedy had made the decision that the United States would not get bogged down in an unwinnable war in the jungles of Southeast Asia. And once again, the military and industrial hierarchies that JFK had inherited from the Eisenhower administration were advising just the opposite. President Kennedy's National Security Action Memo 263, ordering all military personnel home from Vietnam by the end of 1965, was reversed by Lyndon Johnson with input from members of the military-industrial complex just 4 days after the murder of JFK in the streets of Dallas, assuring the Vietnam War. Back in Chicago that Saturday morning, November 2, 1963, crowds had started to line the streets in preparation for President Kennedy's visit. The press plane had taken off from Washington, but at least two shooters remained at large, and Kennedy's advisors convinced him to cancel his trip. And finally, the arrest of Thomas Arthur Vallee is made. Vallee's arrest was made by two CIA-connected Chicago police officers, that is, officers who either worked nearly exclusively for the CIA or took extensive CIA training away from their normal jobs. Officers Daniel Groth and Peter Sherla had watched Vallee all night, but only arrested him at 9:10 a.m., 2.5 hours before the president was due in Chicago and after the trip was officially canceled. The impression given is that the purpose of the two intelligence-connected officers may not have been to restrain Vallee, but instead to shadow him until after the president had been shot. For the success of the assassination plot, the scapegoat had to remain free, so long as Kennedy was still coming to Chicago and could be killed there. If the officer's purpose was, as claimed, to get Vallee off the street and protect the president, well then why was Vallee's arrest put off until after government authorities knew President Kennedy was no longer coming to Chicago? On the following Monday and Tuesday, Special Agent in Charge Maurice Martineau collected the Chicago plot information from his Secret Service agents. Unlike their work in other investigations, they were told to prepare no documents of their own. Following Martineau's orders, the Chicago agents dictated oral reports to the office's secretary. They were then ordered to turn in their notebooks. Secret Service Washington Chief James J. Raleigh had phoned Martineau from Washington asking that the Chicago office use a special COS, or Central Office Secret File Number, for this case. In the Chicago office, only Martineau wrote and saw the top secret report. He then sent it by special courier to Washington Chief James Raleigh. Incredibly, Secret Service agents in Dallas and the Dallas police will never be told about the activities in Chicago. They will not be told that a four-man hit team was sent to Chicago less than 3 weeks before with the intent of shooting the president with high-powered rifles from unguarded office buildings overlooking his motorcade route. Records of the two detained men questioned by Secret Service agents Stocks and Motto all night before the president's scheduled arrival the next morning will disappear. A few days after the Dallas assassination, NBC News in Chicago learned about Vallee's arrest. They found that Vallee's license plate information came back as frozen. Only the FBI could obtain this information. Also, the registration plate on the car Thomas Arthur Vallee was driving at the time of his arrest was classified, restricted to U.S. intelligence agencies, and NBC News got no further. Why did James Raleigh, head of the Secret Service in Washington, not make sure everyone in Dallas 3 weeks later was informed about the Chicago plot, and especially about securing the motorcade route? We'll see shortly that just the opposite happened. Not only was the Chicago plot not used as a reason to escalate security around President Kennedy, some Dallas police officers were actually ordered to stand down, not to assist in the protection of the president in their own city. And routine assistance from military personnel from bases in the area to assist in the protection of the president was most uncharacteristically refused. Again, by the Secret Service in Washington, and specifically by Secret Service Washington Chief James Raleigh. Further, when Chicago Secret Service agent Abraham Bolden tried to contact the Warren Commission several months later with information about the Chicago plot, he was arrested on false charges. Bolden was placed in jail, keeping him from telling what he knew about the Chicago plot to the public and the Warren Commission. Not one word about the Chicago plot appears in the Warren Commission report.
We have the Chicago plot, which is so similar to what happened in Dallas. You know, so, I mean, how could that be covered up by Castro? How could that be covered up by the mafia? You know, how could that be covered up by the KGB? That it was just a coincidence that both those plots were so similar to each other? See, clearly, somebody was saying, we got to get rid of this guy, and we have to get rid of him in the fall of 1963. We can't let him run the risk of being reelected. You know, we can't get rid of him during an election campaign. We have to get rid of him now. That clearly seems to be the message of both that of those two plots in November. Somebody's hunting down Kennedy. He's not getting out of 1963 alive.
If you like what you hear every week and want to learn more about the assassination, please pick up my book, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's available right now on Amazon, or you can find it at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. Also this week, I'd like to announce that I'll be speaking at the Citizens Against Political Assassinations, or otherwise known as CAPA, conference in Dallas in November. If you'd like to get a signed copy of my book or just meet and talk about the case, I'd love to see you there in November. The conference runs from Friday, November 22nd to Sunday, November 24th. I will be speaking about my book, The End of Innocence, and also I'll be speaking about the presence of professional assassins in Dealey Plaza the day President Kennedy was killed. I'll also be speaking about a second arrest in the Texas Theater that day. You could get tickets for the conference at www.capa-us.org. Hope to see you there.